This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 210. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we're going to begin our countdown to the 2018 FEI World Equestrian Games by talking to some of the riders and grooms. We begin this series with a conversation with Lauren Kiefer. That's coming up later on in the program. Our first guests this week are two veterinarians who are both eventers. They're both competing at their first AECs later this year, and they practice in Colorado, so they're here to give us advice on how to deal with the altitude, especially if you've not been to Colorado before to compete, and also have some tips on dealing with that dry heat. Doctors Erin Contino and Chris Kowchek are both based at the Colorado State University. Well, I'm joined now by both Erin and Chris in Colorado to talk about give us some advice on how to prepare your horses for the extreme heat and altitude at the Colorado Horse Park. But first of all, we're going to begin with a little bit of background because they're both eventers and they're both going to be competing at the AECs. So welcome to the program, Chris and Erin.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have you both here because it's a fun story. Husband and wife team, you're both veterinarians. And you're both eventers. It's a wonderful combination. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate this because you have all the wisdom and experience, obviously, of competing as well. So let's start with a little bit of background. Erin, why don't you start with telling us how you got into eventing and how you can combine your eventing with your job as a vet?
That's a great question. I actually started eventing through the United States Pony Club in the mid-80s in California. So I grew up as an event rider through high school and then was temporarily a college dropout to go be a working student for Denny Emerson. And then went back to college and eventually found my way to the East Coast where I was a barn manager and sort of followed the eventing circuit up and down the coast for quite a while in my 20s, and then decided that I wanted to be a vet. So that was what I thought was going to be the end of my eventing career. I'd had about a decade where I didn't compete at all. And then now that I've finished vet school and residency training and have a more permanent job, I decided that it was time to get back into it. So I've just been competing again for the last few years.
Tell us about your horse.
I have an off-the-track thoroughbred that I got through the O'Donohues. He's got all of the things he needs to be a superstar. So I've just been taking my time with him. We did beginner novice last year. He's just moved up to novice this year. He's pretty fabulous. I'm pretty excited about him. He's a six-year-old lanky thoroughbred that just needs a little more time.
And do you have a trainer? How do you fit this all in? Do you get any help at all with dressage particularly?
Not enough. I do a lot of it on my own, which is not ideal. I could really use some eyes on the ground. The trainers that I ride with live a fair distance away. So finding the time to make a 2-hour drive or even an hour drive just doesn't happen as frequently as it needs to.
So what about your preparation for the AECs then? This is going to be your first trip to the AECs. What have you done with him this year and what will you do now leading up to the event?
Our big outing for the year is that we're actually getting ready to go to Rebecca. We'll leave this weekend. That will be sort of his biggest venue that he's ever competed at. And it will be, I presume, a fairly beefy novice. So I expect that will prepare him well. Show jumping is by far my weakest link. And so I do ride with a jumper trainer and have actually done some of the A shows at the Colorado Horse Park last fall and earlier this year in order to help prepare for bigger venues and the pressures of show jumping, which tend to get to me.
Is this your first time to Rebecca Farm then?
It is.
So let's hear about Chris. Tell us about your story. Chris, how you got into the sport and the horse that you're riding?
Yeah, we actually laugh about the story because about the time. So I grew up actually team roping and calf roping ever since I was a little kid. And then being a veterinarian for quite some time now, never really made the time to do something like this. So about the time that Aaron was coming back online, we had actually gone and looked at a mare that was owned by a client, very good dressage horse. She had jumped a fair bit. And we went ahead and got her, and we're still not sure exactly how it happened. They took me out to just kind of hack, and they put me on her, let me jump a couple of cross country fences. And I think the quote I use is, I thought it was more fun than skiing the Black Diamond runs up in the mountains. So at that time, we just kept riding. And a couple of years ago for my birthday, Aaron got me a week at Denny's adult camp, and we went back there and rode with him, which we did again the following year. And which was great, you know, because in doing this, Aaron's kind of had to, I won't say cut corners, but just kind of get to the meat of what I'm supposed to do, where, you know, Denny, being quite a bit more cerebral, kind of started telling me why. So we started competing a couple of years ago. The mare is not the bravest in the world, but it's, you know, I think really advanced, you know, my riding and how I go forward. So we've had some good success. We did our first training level event a couple of weeks ago and finished, which was great. And she just, like I said, she's a wonderful mare. There's never an easy ride, but there's, you know, so much to learn while I'm doing it. So basically came to it later in life, and, you know, I've got a built-in trainer and a wonderful horse. There's not much more I could ask for.
Sounds like a great combination. And what will your preparation be then for the AECs? Will you go to Rebecca Farm, Chris?
Yeah, in fact, we're going to do the novice 3 days. So we've had to kind of ramp up the conditioning part. This mare is part draft. And so we're always sensitive about trying to make sure she's physically ready to go. And so we've been doing a lot of conditioning work, just prepping for Rebecca. And, you know, once we're done, we'll give her a little time to recover. But then, you know, staying on her and keeping her going forward is always the challenge. So we'll ramp up for Rebecca, and then we'll just try to maintain beyond that.
And how do you fit in your daily training, both of you, with the schedules you must have as vets?
Well, it's got to be a priority. I mean, that's number one. I think that's a challenge regardless of what you do when you have a busy career. So, you know, we set time aside. We kind of plan as best we can, you know, through the week on how we're going to do this. Right now, I actually take my mare to another place to do a lot of the conditioning work. But, you know, we've got good friends and colleagues who understand, and we work together and just try to plan it as well as possible.
I think we have to be creative too with our time. We're very lucky in our jobs that we do have some flexibility. So there are certain times when I can ride early in the morning in order to get to appointments later. Or right now, of course, being summer, we often ride quite late at night. So we're definitely not at home a lot. And this is also just what we've decided we're going to spend our time doing. This is in lieu of any family vacations or anything else. That is our vacations or traveling to horse shows together.
Well, just tell us each what you do as veterinarians, where you work, and what you specialize in.
We're actually both at Colorado State University, and I am boarded in equine sports medicine and rehabilitation. So my job is predominantly working on lameness and poor performance cases.
Yeah, and then I'm boarded in sports medicine and large animal surgery. I've been at CSU for a couple of decades now, and we do not just the clinic part, which is busy, but we also have a very strong orthopedic research program. And so we do, it's a nice balance, the clinics and the research, just trying to, you know, answer questions that plague all of us on a regular basis.
Well, that leads us very nicely into the other reason why we wanted to talk to you, and to get some advice to help our listeners, our audience here, our members, of course, who are competing maybe in Colorado for the first time, on the effects of altitude and the kind of things that they could best prepare their horses for, and maybe the effects of heat too at altitude, if there is any effects that they should be aware of. So where would you like to start with this, Chris?
Yeah, it's a great topic and one we deal with all the time. You know, for us personally, we're always going the opposite direction, or at least usually, right? I mean, we're going someplace down from elevation. So, but I think in our experiences, you know, there was a couple of years where I worked at Ruidoso Downs, which is a quarter horse track in New Mexico, but it's at altitude. And, you know, the practical experience there is it seems like there were two groups of trainers that would address the issue, because a lot of the racing quarter horses would come from California. And they would either come in to Ruidoso, you know, upward as close as 48 hours before they would race, or they'd come in several weeks ahead of time in condition. And a lot, you know, there were a lot of factors that dictated that. And it didn't seem to be a difference in how those horses performed between those two scenarios. The point of sharing that, I think, is the fact that we can talk about science all we want, but and experience, but there's no hard and fast rules. There's things that people follow. Some of them are more based on horsemen's experience, and there's limited experimental data, at least on horses. There's some, but it's not a wide volume of literature. So, you know, that kind of frames the problem, at least in trying to make recommendations on what to do.
I think some other things for listeners to be aware of is that the 2-day is probably sort of the minimum. So from a practical standpoint, if they're going to be coming in for the AECs, I would imagine that most people are planning to get there at least 2 days ahead of time. Anyhow, if you go, there's sort of this awkward gap that Chris already alluded to, that these people either come in about 2 days ahead of time, which works quite well, or they come in weeks and weeks ahead of time. And that's probably not practical for most people coming to the AECs. So really, I would imagine most people will be trying to hit that 2 to 5 day window. And that's okay. Horses have a really large volume of red blood cells that they store in their spleen. And those can be released with stress sort of as needed. And high altitude will create a stress. And so they have this up to, again, 50% of their blood cells can be released when needed. And that gives them the ability to carry more oxygen, which of course is necessary at altitude. The other thing that happens, and it can happen in as quickly as 2 days, is that they have, same as in humans, an enzyme called DPG that basically is what's responsible for hemoglobin and the red blood cells detaching from one another. And so by increasing the DPG, which they will do at altitude after a couple of days, as that level increases, hemoglobin can be unloaded from the red blood cells easier, meaning the horse has ability to get more oxygen. So I would, again, practically speaking, I think the 2 to 5 day window is adequate for people if they're planning to come to the AECs.
And it fits in their schedule too. I mean, that's the other side of this, is making it practical for the people who are doing this. And so fortunately, it seems somewhat optimized within that 2 to 5 day period.
Does it make any difference if they fly in or drive in?
Well, I mean, you have the thing that gets forgotten here, I think, is just the stress of transport, because that's that, like, in all likelihood, has an additive effect. And so I think it's more dependent on what the horse is most comfortable with. And again, what ends up being practical and what's part of the normal process for the trainer and everyone else. So, you know, there's issues with flying that I think most people who do it a lot, have that under, you know, pretty good control. But there's nothing unique about flying or driving that would prioritize one over the other.
Now, what about feed? What do you suggest that they do to prepare for the feed? Obviously, not making any radical adjustments, but in terms of the horses getting sufficient supplements, electrolytes, and those sort of things, that anything that they could prepare and maybe, you know, be ahead of time, and what adjustments they might have to make when they get to altitude?
I think the electrolytes are going to be a really important component, because we do need to make sure that the horses keep their blood volume up. And of course, they're at risk for being dehydrated. Colorado can get quite warm in the summer. It shouldn't be as hot during the AECs as it is right now. In July, it routinely gets to 100 or over 100 in that area. By August, I would expect it to cool off. But nonetheless, the benefit of electrolytes, of course, is if you feed too much, they just get excreted in the urine. So it's relatively safe to feed electrolytes a couple times a day in their feed to replenish any of their sweat losses. But it also, of course, encourages them to drink. So it's a great way to keep up with blood volume. Of course, your normal feeding rules want to feed plenty of roughage. That is a good way to keep fluids in the system because hay will draw water. And then I'm a big proponent of just not changing too much at competition. Horses are creatures of habit, as we know. So I think that that's important to not make any drastic changes too close to traveling.
Chris, what about exercise when they get there? You know, if, assuming that they have at least a couple of days to settle in and adjust to the altitude, what would you suggest they do when they pull out the next day and go for a little hack?
Well, and that's a good point. And I think that, you know, there's two things. I think one is, yeah, the hack is definitely important. Get them out, let them relax, let them move forward. I think as you would, you know, probably with any travel schedule. The other thing too is just, you know, see how the horse is responding to the environment. I think some of them, you know, whether it's excitement or altitude or whatever, they just don't seem right. And I think, you know, the goal would be to get to a point to where, you know, your horse is starting to kind of get into the groove of competition time. You're kind of getting that, you know, what you're used to seeing. And it may take a couple of days to get to that point. So, you know, you kind of take a little bit of what they give you is get them out on the hack, get them comfortable, get them going. Over a couple of days, start ramping the work up. You might start to notice a change. You know, we were discussing this earlier. As you kind of go through the information, you see that whether it's horse or human, after about 9 days, they actually start to lose performance indices and start to struggle a little bit. So you don't want to overdo it, but at the same time, they've got a job to do to some extent. And so you want to make sure that as part of your normal training procedure that you got the horse to where they need to be for competition. Obviously, if they're struggling, then at that point, I think, you know, start consulting with the veterinarian on grounds, start to, you know, talk about what your options are and trying to address, you know, what's going on. Things like that would be advisable.
Are there any things particularly you should look for in terms of the symptoms, the ABC, as I call it, appearance, behavior, condition, those first early symptom signs that something is amiss with them, that they're not responding well to altitude?
It's interesting because in humans, we know that they suffer from high mountain sickness, and that really hasn't been recognized in horses. So I would expect when horses are struggling, and whether it's the altitude or the heat, maybe hard to know, but it would be similar signs. So it would be not being as alert and responsive as they normally are, maybe being a little bit more dull off of your aids. We know that the altitude will take a bit of a toll on their performance. So they're not going to be able to gallop, say, as fast as they could at sea level. Obviously, off feed, that's sort of an overly obvious one. But really, I go a lot on brightness, if you will, how responsive they are to normal stimulus. Hopefully, you're catching those things a lot sooner than in cases of heat exhaustion. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's the heat bothering them as much as the altitude.
And I wanted to talk about the effects of the heat as well. What can our listeners expect when they have that combination of extreme heat and altitude? What should they look for? What should they do to prepare?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's heat at this altitude's a little bit deceiving. You see it in people, you see it in animals as well. You know, it is, quote, a dry heat. And so you don't sense the sweating. You don't sense kind of those environmental cues that tell you, you know, hey, I need to get water. And so consequently, you know, we're probably not as tuned in the low humidity type of environment, especially at altitude. So in that case, again, it's the simple basics. Make sure they've got water. Make sure they're drinking. You know, we use a lot of things. For instance, when we haul horses, you know, we'll put a little bit of bee pulp or something at the bottom of a bucket and just, you know, if they're not drinking, just get them to get in the water and play with it and try to somehow get them to drink. But the key there is just be hypersensitive, I think, to the fact that you're not going to see the same signs of heat overload just because you don't have that constant sweating and that humidity like most people are probably used to in that regard.
Any other symptoms? Is there a point where they should clearly consult the veterinarian on site? Anything else you can think of that they should look for or be aware of with either the effects of altitude and heat?
Some of the things we know with heat exhaustion, if you take endurance horses, for example, when they hit that point, they actually will start to get a little bit uncoordinated. They will lose their anal tone. And again, they just won't be as responsive to things. So sometimes I will just watch them from afar. I'll watch them in their stall. And obviously, if they're quiet in the back of their stall, that's great. I want them to rest up and conserve their energy. But I may cluck or call their name or do something and just see how quickly they're going to sort of turn their head and be reactive to things in the environment. And if they're not their normal responsiveness, then to me, that's sort of an early indicator. And hopefully we would catch that well before they get to the point of, again, sort of losing anal tone or becoming uncoordinated or becoming obviously sluggish.
And hopefully before the competition, you know, if they're only in there for, say, 48 hours before the start of the competition, what sort of things should they be aware of once the competition starts and once they are actually expected to gallop at their usual speed?
Well, again, we know that altitude for horses and for humans does take a little bit of a toll on what their sort of maximum performance is. So my recommendation is to sort of know that you're going to need them a little bit fitter than what you would at sea level. So you could almost think of it as conditioning for the level above what you're going to be riding at. And you have just about enough time. Now we're probably 6 weeks out from the AECs, which you can definitely improve your condition in a 6 week time frame. In that way, they're almost a little bit over conditioned so that they're better prepared to deal with the heat and with the altitude. Things we know about how to help them in the heat, obviously going to be proper cooling techniques. So making sure that you've got your water sort of ready after cross country and that you're continuously scraping them so they're not stuck with that heat barrier of water on top of them. Finding a cool place to stand. You don't necessarily have to walk them. So if they're a bit hot, it may be fine to just find a place that's a little bit shady and get them out of that direct sunlight. We have a lot of direct sunlight in Colorado, and it can dehydrate you pretty quickly.
Just to add to that, I think as part of that, you know, preparation leading up to AECs, it's the thing that really seems to be affected is what they call their VO2 max. So in other words, as you're training, you know, adding some sprint work and some other things that really ups their conditioning. It doesn't need to be long, hard gallops in a sense, but just trying to really get that heart rate up and adding a little bit of intense speed work to some of that so you can start to get that kind of performance into C up to better prepare them for that.
Well, this is great advice. And one thing that I pulled out of there was to train at your fitness to the next level, just to get them fitter than you normally would to account for the altitude. Are there any final thoughts anything else that you would like to add to this conversation that would help our members?
Just that we're super excited. The AECs are coming to Colorado and we're happy to get to host them. Excited people are coming out to see our state.
Yeah, the horse park is a great place. The host, I mean, we know the host from Tryon, so we know they put on they do great things with the facilities, and it really is a fun place to compete, and we're really looking forward to it.
You get to compete in your backyard too and make your debut at the AECs. So the very best of luck to both of you. Have great fun there. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on the program and for your advice.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And now to kick off our series leading up to the World Equestrian Games, I'm joined by Lauren Kiefer, who has been named to the team on Vermiculus, the 11-year-old Anglo-Arab owned by Miss Jacqueline Mars. Lauren, welcome to the program again.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be on.
Well, it's obviously ramping up now, getting into the heat of the summer, so we want you to catch up with you before the pressure gets really turned on in the lead-up to WEG. But are you feeling it a little bit now? Does the excitement start to seep in just a little bit at this point or not?
You know, I think we're certainly very excited as soon as the list comes out, but we also are very realistic that there's a long time between now and WEG, and so the main focus is just making sure, you know, we want to bubble wrap the horses, but we also want to have them peak at the right time and be competitive. Like, we don't want to just get there and show up. So, you know, we're trying to do our best to make sure that we produce the best result possible at the right time. And I think it's a great benefit that they named the team fairly early so that we're not all kind of vying for a spot up until the last minute.
Before we talk about your partnership with Vermiculus, because you've been very selective of what you've done with him this year, let's just talk about your preparation as an athlete. Since you've been now on the team a few times, Lauren, you're used to the whole protocols of the team and the team psychology and the team preparedness and all of that. Talk a little bit first about your own personal fitness and your own personal psychological preparation for a major event like this.
You know, I think for most of us that have, you know, been on several teams, we like pressure and hopefully in most cases thrive under it. So, you know, certainly building up to big competitions, I kind of enjoy that kind of pressure and it kind of lasers in the focus. And then, you know, for personal fitness, I do a lot of Pilates, a bit of running. I actually hate running, but I do it. But, you know, I'm also fortunate I have so many horses to ride that does a lot to keep us fit also. And, you know, frankly, when it's so hot in the summers, it's easy to kind of stay fit because nobody wants to eat that much when it's 100 degrees out and you're riding.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But you mentioned Pilates then is something that several riders that I know have been using over the years. How has it helped you with your core strength, do you think? Do you do it regularly enough for you to say, I would miss it if I didn't do it? It would affect my core strength?
I do it a lot more in Florida, especially during the down season. But it certainly, yes, it does a lot for my core strength. And, you know, for like, I'm a taller, bigger girl. So, you know, I don't want to do a whole bunch of kind of exercises that build muscle or make me bigger. You know, I want to stay lean for my horses. So I think that it has a lot of very good exercise that kind of develops that kind of muscle.
When you say you want to stay lean and with, you know, temperatures in the hundreds, it does affect your appetite as well. But are you mindful of your nutrition as well? Have you changed any of that when you get closer to a big competition year like it is this year, Lauren?
Yeah, I certainly stay more mindful. And I just generally, I do like to eat. I love cooking. And so I do generally eat pretty well. I'm not a big junk food eater. Like, we all like to have our ice cream and everything else. But I typically cook for myself every night and I like making good, healthy dinner. So it's not a huge lifestyle change for me once the big competitions roll around.
Lean and mean. That's what we like, like our athletes. Awesome. Well, let's talk about this partnership then with Vermiculus. Lauren, let's go back to the start, because I said you've been selective in what you've done with him, careful preparation this year. But let's talk about how you first met. What's the story of the partnership?
Well, his full brother, Snooze Alarm, was actually my kind of first proper event horse. And I got him all as a four-year-old and went all the way from beginner novice through Rolex. So we had a bit of a fairy tale story together. And then 10 years later, his full brother, Vermiculus, was born. And the breeders I'd stayed in contact with, and they called me up. So I bought him as a feral, unbroke, 2 or 3 year old colt. Still, he was still a stallion then. And I got, yeah, and I got him down to Florida, and I turned him out with snooze, and then I wasn't able to touch him or catch him for 3 months. So he was quite the feral little pony in the beginning, for sure. So it definitely took a while. And, you know, as a young horse, even competing, he was just cheeky. Like, he always loved jumping and competing, but he was always just a naughty, cheeky little horse. And David always said it would, he's like, when this horse goes 4-star, everybody's going to notice him. And sure enough, he was right.
So here you are at 4-star with an Anglo-Arab again. What is it about Anglo-Arabs? Does it give him that extra sort of spiritedness of an Arab, or what's his temperament like?
All the Arabs I've had have actually been very, for the most part, quiet, especially on the ground. They kind of have a reputation for being hot horses, but I really haven't had that issue at all. I think they're very, very smart, and so I think if they're produced wrong, they hold a grudge for sure. So I think that's what you have to be careful about, is not lying to them, because if you lie to them, they're going to remember it for a very long time. But, you know, they have all, you know, the Anglo is actually very popular in Europe, and they have what you're looking for in eventing. They move, they jump, they're careful, and they have the blood for the long distances, and they're agile. So I've always kind of been, I've never really spooked away from someone saying that there's Arab blood.
Let's talk about what you've done with him this year. When you came off last year in Ocala, what was the strategy going forward with Wegg in mind then, Lauren? Talk us through your plan for the year, for the season.
I knew the most important thing was just to show consistency, and then also that at the CCIs that he would kind of peak and be competitive. So that was the whole goal of the spring, was to make sure we got him to Kentucky and peaked at the right moment, and he was able to, you know, show himself at his best. And I think we really, you know, my team really nailed that goal. So we were pretty happy, and, you know, we'll look to do the same thing heading towards Wegg.
And in terms of his preparation before a big competition, talk us through that, because obviously you said you peaked for what you needed in Kentucky, finished that fifth there. Let's talk about the dressage and that preparation so that it does peak again in September.
Yeah, you know, the thing with him is I try to kind of, we're working on new stuff on the flat or getting to a new level on it. We do it kind of when he's come back into work and, you know, before we're kind of heavily competing. So like right now is the time we're kind of really pushing the level on the flat. Because then as we get closer to the event, we want everything. You want him to feel very comfortable in his body and where he's at and very secure. So you want to make sure that heading into the event, or we try to make sure heading into the event, that he's kind of feels very established and that the movements feel easy and secure to him, so that he can go in and look calm and confident in front of the judges. And then as far as the jumping, you know, I try to make sure that we school any of the exercises he might find on course, and then you just gotta trust your training and trust your horse.
And what sort of work would he be in now? What would a typical week be like for him at the moment in his fitness schedule?
We stick to a pretty good routine with all the horses. So typically they have Mondays off, and then Tuesday is either a trot day or flat. And then on Wednesdays, they gallop on Jacqueline Marr's beautiful gallop here in Virginia. And then Thursday is, again, a trot or flat day. Friday is a jump day. Saturday is, again, a trot or flat day. And then Sunday, they gallop again.
Does he get to go in water at all? Do you swim him?
No. We have used aqua tread in the past. And we quite enjoy it, but I've had a lot of success. I've actually started using a functional electrical stimulation with a lot of my horses, and I've had a lot of success with that. It's hard to be able to use AquaTread consistently when we're on the road that much. So, you know, the nice thing with the FES machine is we can use it consistently on the horses and have a very routine program with it. I would love to have an AquaTread I could use consistently, but you know, it's an expensive and not viable option. So we do the best of what we have and we do it pretty well.
Well, yeah, yes, you certainly do. When you mentioned their therapists, talk about the other therapists that you prefer to use, because I mean, it's all about high performance now, and therapists just come and go, don't they? There seem to be things that trend, but then some things that stick around. What are your preferences?
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, and we try to make sure, I think any therapy is useful, but only if you use it consistently. Like you're even, you know, as a human athlete, you can't go get chiropractic once a year and feel that much better. You got to treat them the same as a high performance athlete in any human sport. So, you know, the FES machine we use consistently, they get the magnetic blanket daily. We have a TheraPlate. We have our masseuses come in regularly and consistently to have a feel of the horses and work on them as needed. So we have a great team around us that keep up a very consistent program. And I think the horses reap the benefit of that.
How about you? Do you have any therapists that you prefer? Do you get the massage once a week, Lauren?
I definitely don't treat myself quite as good as the horses. I do see a chiropractor twice a week, Holly Moriarty. Chiropractic really works for me. And then I try to get massages at least once a week when I can, but I'm definitely not as consistent as the horses.
Do you have any ongoing problems then that you have to nurse? I mean, you're still obviously very young, so you probably haven't got too much that's established, but do you have any niggles then that you have to nurse or already from falls?
Yeah, I'd say my back is my worst. I had a compression fracture when I was 16 and then injury to it when I fell at Blenheim last year. But, you know, it's certainly manageable and it's not nearly as bad as some people's. I'm sure when I'm older in my 40s that I'm going to feel a lot worse than I do now.
All right, long way to go, yeah.
Okay. Yes. Hopefully.
Well, let's talk about the lead up then, because you've got so many horses. You've got, what, 7 FEI horses right now. So you're very busy, and you've got the backup. You've got your spare for Weg as well to focus on, Veronica. Let's not forget her.
No, no.
But let's talk about what your, of course, well, let's talk about your summer then, the rest of July now. We're going into August, and before we know it, we'll be in try-on. What's those months, weeks look like for you and the schedule for, particularly for Vermiculus? What will he do?
You know, he runs his first competition at Maryland Horse Trials this weekend. It'll be the first event since Kentucky. Both him and Veronica are running there. And then in a month, we will head up to Bromont to run the CIC 3-star. And that is our planned final outing. And then, you know, I've got a lot of really lovely young horses coming up and everything to keep me busy also, which is also a blessing. Like, then you're not spending too much time focused on your 2 horses and drilling them into the ground. And, you know, I have one of Miss Mars' homebreds heading to Aachen next week. And, you know, the young horses are competing every couple of weeks. So I'll certainly stay busy enough. But it's nice because you get lots of practice out there.
Well, we cannot end, Lauren, without mentioning Miss Mars and what a wonderful supporter she has been to you over the years, how fortunate you were to be able to have that patronage from her and support you with such wonderful world-class horses. Talk a little bit about her interest and involvement now with you in competition, because she seems to appear at these competitions supporting you. I mean, it must be wonderful to have that. And, of course, your family. Let's not forget your family supporting you on this journey.
Yeah, I'm super lucky with the support I have. Like, a lot of people have to work a lot harder than me. And, you know, I'm very blessed to have her support. And, you know, even bigger than when things go right is when things go wrong, is she's about as supportive as she could possibly be. Like, last year was not a great year. And, you know, certainly a lot of owners could get very frustrated, and she wasn't at all. She knows that there's highs and lows in this, and she knows we're trying as hard as we can. So she's very, very kind in that way. And, you know, I can pick out her cheers in the crowd, and she knows that. So she always makes sure when I'm competing, you'll hear her hoop and holler when I come by, because I've told her I can hear. And I also know if I've scared her, because I know she goes quiet. So I know if I've had a bad jump, I've scared her because she doesn't hear.
That's fabulous. And let's mention your parents. We should give them a shout out because they've supported you all the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mom and Papa Keats. They're pretty famous around the competitions. Dad's usually busy fixing all the competitors' trucks and trailers and bikes. And Mama Keats is making sure everybody's fed and whipping up her famous Bing Bing shrimp after cross country. You can find everybody kind of around our stalls in the barn getting into that and maybe a few drinks.
And maybe just a few. Yes, of course. Well, hopefully you'll...
Maybe just a few.
Just a few. Well, of course, you're watching your waistline at the moment, but when it comes to WEG, I'm sure that they'll be there supporting you throughout.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, Lauren, the very best of luck for the rest of the journey. And, of course, congratulations on making the team once again. A very exciting point for you in your career. And, obviously, go Team USA. We will see you in September.
Thank you.
And our thanks again to our guests this week, Drs. Erin Contino and Chris Kowchek, and to Lauren Kiefer. We'll be continuing this series on the lead up to the World Equestrian Games on each episode now, right through to the event in Tryon, North Carolina, beginning on September the 11th. And don't forget, you'll find much more information about the AECs on the website at useventing.com. There's a button right on the homepage there. And if you are on the website listening to the podcast, you can also take it with you on the go by downloading it to any smartphone app from iTunes or other podcast players. And to keep up to date when the latest episode is posted, do be sure to follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time for more from the United States Eventing Association. Until then, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.